A reading from the Hebrew Scriptures, Isaiah 60, 1-6. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For behold, darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples. But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will be seen upon you. And nations shall come to your light, and kingdoms to the brightness of your arising. Lift up your eyes all around, and see, they all gather together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from afar, and your daughters shall be carried on the hip. Then you shall see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and exult, because the abundance of the sea shall be turned to you. The wealth of nations shall come to you. A multitude of camels shall cover you, the young camels of Midian and Ephah. All those from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and frankincense, and shall bring good news, the praises of the Lord. And from Matthew chapter 2, verses 1-12. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. A contemporary reading, Wise Women Also Came, by Jan Richardson. Wise women also came, the fire burned in their wombs, long before they saw the flaming star in the sky. They walked in shadows, trusting the path would open under the light of the moon. Wise women also came, seeking no directions, no permission from any king. They came by their own authority, their own desire, their own longing. They came in quiet, spreading no rumors, sparking no fears to lead to innocent slaughter, to their sister Rachel's inconsolable lamentations. Wise women also came, and they brought useful gifts: water for labor's washing, fire for warm illumination, a blanket for swaddling. Wise women also came, at least three of them, holding Mary in the labor, crying out with her in the birth pangs, breathing ancient blessings into her ears. Wise women also came, and they went, as wise women always do, home a different way. For the star that shone in the beginning, for the light reborn in our hearts, for the word embodied in us, we give thanks.
by the time the wise ones get to Bethlehem, or is it Nazareth by now, the baby, who this time last year was gurgling angelically in the manger, has discovered how to open the pantry. He can reach the shelf with the Sabbath candles and the precious Torah scroll. He's having fun with wood shavings in Joseph's workshop and banging everything with a hammer. Whoever they are and wherever they're from, the Magi aren't gathered romantically around a manger with picturesquely mooing cows and lullaby-barring sheep. With the precious gifts hidden safely away, the little lad's having fun with the packaging. And Mary, no beautiful blue draperies and Madonna smile now, is preparing meals for Joseph and her stepsons, keeping an eye on the toddler, negotiating kitchen space with a disapproving mother-in-law, and trying to ignore the gossip. Joseph has married her and named the child, but they still talk of Jesus as the son of Mary. And yet, wise ones sought him. Perhaps the early artists got the spirit right with their crowded nativity scenes. Magi and shepherds and family and neighbours, patrons and village gossips, merchants and royalty, creatures great and small, human and animal, all gathered in wonder at the miracle and the promise of the newborn. As we do, giving and taking meaning and reinterpreting the stories in our ways, for our places and times. Memories of Passover and Hanukkah, Greek myths and Roman fables, Aramaic folklore and Galilean fisherfolk wisdom, Jewish temple rites and pagan festivities, and Matthew's special spin on the story. Family stories passed on in jest, perhaps, by Jesus' brothers when they get together as adults. A birth narrative to show how very special this child will be, written to appeal to Jewish listeners, troubled by newcomers, Gentiles, who claim to follow the rabbi Jesus. Memory and mystery. I've had my own epiphany recently. Thanks largely to the carol we just sang, maybe to sermons and Christmas cards, I've always assumed that frankincense and myrrh were only for embalming. I've included images of them in the order of service, along with gold, because I'm fascinated to find that their symbolism and their practical use is so much richer, inspiring me to create a more inclusive contemporary carol that we'll sing after the reflection. If you'd like to look at the pictures, because the wise ones are described as coming from the East, I looked for images of gold from China, contemporary with the time of Jesus' birth. These gold coins were from the Han Dynasty, which lasted from 2006 BCE to AD 25. And coincidentally, I wondered whether the name of the Han Dynasty had come down from China through to Korea, because it's the family name of my little grandsons. Both frankincense and myrrh are resins, hardened sap from trees. In both cases, the trees are slashed and allowed to bleed. The sap hardens and forms beads or tears. Now, some of you might know all this, but to me, this was an epiphany. I had no idea, and so I'm sharing my new gift with you. The pretty Boswellia carteri on the left is the source of the frankincense. As an essential oil, it's used for healing scars, stretch marks, and stress. Frankincense can be effective as an antidepressant, anti-inflammatory, and antiseptic. And because it can slow down and deepen the breath, it's been used for thousands of years in ceremonial incense for meditation and prayer. Thank you, Alexei. The spiky myrrh on the right is native to the Arabian Peninsula and Africa. The word myrrh corresponds with a common Semitic root word meaning bitter. And you might remember in the story of Ruth and Naomi, how somebody, one of the women whose life had turned out not the way she had expected, had changed her name to Mara. Oil of myrrh was used for women's purification. including by Esther, along with the rest of the harem, as the new queen to King Ahasuerus. And myrrh was an ingredient of the consecrated incense, vital in Jerusalem's temple services, and the holy oil for anointing high priests and kings. In the Far East, myrrh was used for healing, including wound healing, digestive health, to balance women's issues, and to slow bleeding. Perhaps someone suggests the wise ones brought healing substances for Jesus after birth, as well as for Mary in her postpartum discomfort. This perhaps would apply if they had arrived promptly after the birth, rather than, as other versions suggest, some couple of years later. It's a nice thought. But who would have thought to do this? Well, Dominican Father Benedict Thomas Viviano, an authority on the Gospel of Matthew, believes it's entirely possible that women could have been among the majors in his birth narrative. Matthew is the only gospel that says anything about them. And his work of the Greek masculine plural magoi, or magoi, for magi, can be used inclusively, just as the English word men often includes women. Viviano specialises in examining the book of Matthew in the light of its literary connections to the Hebrew Bible. Even though Matthew is not strictly a midrash, since it's not about the Old Testament, it employs midrashic techniques to interpret the person of Jesus. Viviano relates the presence of one or more women amongst the Magi to the background story of the Queen of Sheba, with her quest for Israelite royal wisdom, her reverent awe, and her three gifts fit for a king. Alexei, would you sit down now, please? Luca, go and sit down, please. You're lovely, but sit down now. Viviano also points to the phrase, the child and his mother, used at least five times in Matthew's narrative. The presence of Jesus' mother, Mary, is an explicit statement of the presence of a woman at the time of the Magi's visit. He says it's a question of attending to the feminine resonances in the text. In commenting on his analysis, Sister Christine Schenck writes, in the Middle East, it would have been inconceivable for men to be in the presence of a woman without the presence of other women. Joseph is conspicuously absent when the Magi visit. This is surprising, since Matthew's infancy account normally narrates events from the point of view of Joseph. These mysterious visitors with their mysterious gifts. Christine Schenck again. Scholars tell us that the Magoi were a caste associated with the interpretation of dreams, astrology, Zoroastrianism, and magic. In support of Viviano's thesis, Zoroastrianism allowed women to serve as priests, and in ancient Persia, there were female astronomers and rulers. The overriding message of Matthew's Magi narrative is that learned, wise foreigners, the ultimate outsiders for his Jewish Christian audience, came to pay homage to a new ruler whose spiritual power and wisdom surpassed their own. If there had been wise men, women instead of, or as well as wise men on the scene, who would they have been? The innkeeper's wife would surely be one of them, suggests an article by a group of ecclesial women, a community in the US known as the Adorers of the Blood of Christ. Who else, they write, would have thought of the barn as a safe and warm place for the pregnant woman to deliver her child? She must have sent her husband to move the animals around, muck out the stall and prepare the fresh straw and the manger. They also suggest a cook and a midwife were there too. Jesus would not have assisted at the birth because blood would have made him unclean. The midwife would prepare for the birth, and she alone would be the first to hold the child Jesus and present him to his mother Mary. Memory, mystery, meaning. So much of our memory and our understanding is speculative. We weave together stories and ideas and phrases like strands of harakeke to create a mat, a whariki to warm us, or a garment that fits our worldview. We can get calluses from the repetition of this weaving. Sometimes we need strands that are more colourful. Sometimes the jar of costly balm is broken, the rod of Jesse slashed and bleeding. A spiky plant is twisted to form a crown. An Epiphany by Vermont artist Janice McKenzie, and do have a look at the beautiful image on the Order of Service. In Epiphany, a multiracial trio of female magi visits the baby Jesus and his mother. Barbara Marion, who commissioned the painting, says, "More than a few people have asked about the gender of the tallest of the magi in this image. Male? Female? Trans? I find that stunningly wonderful because possibly three minority groups might be embodied in this portrait in the eyes and imaginations of so many viewers." She adds, "It's easy to get so caught up in regal images of Matthew's night visitors that we miss the core message, Christ for all people." The unconventional portrayal of the Magi makes good theological sense. The story of the Magi in the Gospel of Matthew allowed the Jewish followers of Jesus to imagine the unthinkable, God's grace extending to the outsiders, the Gentiles. Who are the outsiders in our world? Can we imagine the favour of God extending beyond the boundaries of race, class, nationality, ethnicity, religious devotion, and gender? Isaiah reminds us, "Lift up your eyes all around and see they all gather together. They come to you, magicians, wise women, generous visitors, treasures from around the world, and the gift of wisdom. Grace extending to the Gentiles, the outsiders, dreamers and visionaries, shepherds and carpenters. And here we are, star-led people of all ages, all backgrounds, all faiths, meeting around a child of hope and wonder, sharing the good news. The love we share at Christmas and the wonder of Epiphany inspiring us to recognise in every being a precious godchild and gift. For this is our story, our Epiphany, our moment of realisation. Arise, shine, for our light has come."